The goal for today is to start the sugya of what's called Tavrei Oshasye.
Where is this?
And this is in Bava Kamma Daf Samachayim and Aleph, four lines down from the top, Gufa. Now the main discussion, the main focal point of the sugya is the question of beginning with Gneva but ending with an act of destruction of the object. So first you have what's called Hotsami Beis Bailin. That's the first stage in Gneva, when the Ganav steals the object and takes it out of the Rishus of the Bailin. And then the Ganav went ahead and he did something to destroy the object. And that can take effect in many different ways. He may have destroyed the object by shechting it, slaughtering the animal. He may have destroyed the object by beating it up. You know, he took a makel, he took a stick and he beat up the animal. That's called kichasha. He may have worked the animal to death. And so there are many different permutations of destroying the object. And the question is, do we view this destruction of the object as an extension of the gzela, or is it an entity unto itself? Is it a machayev unto itself? Now, within the context of gneva, we have basically three categories. We have kefel. I'm sorry, let me start. We have keren, which means veheshiv sagzela shargozal, you have to return the object, hashov sagneva. And that's keren. If the object is there, he'll return the object. If the object is lost, he'll pay its value. That's called keren. And that's the solid basis, you know, that's solid rock. That doesn't change in any situation, in any scenario. That's always a given, you pay keren. The second level is called kefel. Now, kefel is a little bit more tricky. It's not absolute. It's not solid rock bottom, because mode of knas is potter. Kefel is fundamentally different than keren. You're no longer returning the object. You're returning its value on top of the object. So basically what kefel means is, if the object is worth 100, he returns the object and he pays 100 out of pocket in addition to the object. And that's called a knas.
It is a knas, because he's paying more than
you. Correct. Anytime you pay more than, you know, you it's no longer compensation, it's a penalty, you're paying more than what you destroyed, that's called knas. The third level, which is even a more intensive and more profound knas, is dalet vehe, and that means you pay 400% or 500% of the value, and that's for tavach or mochar, either slaughtering the animal or selling the animal.
What is 1/4?
Say it again?
What is 1/4 or 1/5?
Well, again, you know, this keren, and that's going to be 100%. This kefel will be another 100%, so now you're up to 200%. Then you're going to add another 200% to get up to dalet, that's already 400%, and hey will get you another 300%, to the 200% is 500%. So you could actually be paying five times the value of the object that you stole in the most, let's say, extreme kind of knas. Now, another introduction to our sugya requires us understanding something called keren chomesh v'osham. Now, when do you pay keren chomesh v'osham, and when do you pay keren kefel and dal vehe? In other words, we have, in a sense, two roads, right? Two different alternative paths. One is called keren kefel and dal vehe. The other is keren chomesh and osham. Now, I set it up as if they're two roads that never overlap, but that's really oversimplifying it, because it's very possible that there are certain cases in which even when you chayv kefel, you'll have to bring a korban osham. Let me give you an example. When we talk about a keren kefel and dal vehe, we're discussing not necessarily or not exclusively a case where someone steals the object from base bialim, but even a toein tainas ganav b'pikadon. So you have a shomer chinam, and the mafkid said to the shomer, return my object, you know, you were in custodian, you know, you're the custodian for a month or half a year, whatever it is, now return the object. And the shomer put forward a tainas gneva. And he said, look, I can't return to you the object because the object was stolen. Then afterwards, they were mashbia him, in other words, the shomer took a shvua, because any tainas p'tur by a shomer has to be supported by a shvua. And he took the oath that it was stolen. Then two witnesses come in, and they testify that the shomer is he's the real ganav. He stole the object. He has the object stashed away in his
safe.
In his safe, or up in his attic somewhere. And not only did he put forward a false claim, that's bad enough. But worse, moreover, says the Edom, they testify that he took a false shvua. He perjured himself in the oath. And in this case, what we have is not just toing tainus ganav b'pikadon chayev kefel, but in addition, he's going to have to bring a carbon asham because of the shvua that he took. Okay, and again, we're going to see various tanoim. You know, some tanoim say that shvua, that carbon asham is only attached to the case of hodal piatzmo, where there were no edim. Again, that's all for us to learn today in Mitzvah Hashem, because those tanoim are of the opinion that the carbon asham has to be a package deal with keren v'chomesh. Now, keren v'chomesh apply when there were no edim, or at least not initially, there were no edim to testify that he, the shomer, stole the object, but rather he, the shomer, comes forward
and volunteers
that information out of pangs of guilt. So he wants to do tshuva, and he confesses his crime. That's called hodal pi atzmo. Now, once he has a hodah, that takes him out of the category of kefel, because of the principle called moda v'knas patur, and puts him into a different category called keren v'chomesh. And whenever this keren v'chomesh, there's also a carbon asham if he took a shvua sheker. So those are just a few words of introduction. Now, getting back to kefel and dalet vehe, the premise that we should operate with initially is that keren, kefel, and dalet vehe is one entity. When I say one entity, what I mean is there's one machayev, and the rules and regulations that govern any one of those three should govern all of those three, because they all belong to one indivisible unit. That's before we see Rav. So, for example, one of the rules that operate with regard to keren, kefel, and dalet vehe is that we have to assume that you should be paying according to the value of the object. That's clear, right? In other words, what am I going to ask him to pay when I pay keren? Now, if the object is still intact, so he returns the object, and then he's finished with keren. If the object is no longer to be had, then he has to pay a value. So obviously, the value should be commensurate to what? The value of the object that you stole. Okay. So that's called, in the Lashon HaShas, Mishalin Ke'en Sheganav. In other words, even though the object is not alive anymore, imagine, theoretically, that the object would be alive. How much would it be worth if it were alive? Now, it's going to be a little bit complicated to shots this up, because we don't have the animal in front of us to take it to the marketplace and figure out how much it would take, you know, how much the buyer would be willing to pay. But that's more or less what we have to do. Bezin has to figure out if the object that he stole would be alive, what would it be worth? So let's say, you know, the ox is worth a zuz, you know, a goat is worth two zuz, you know, whatever it might be. But then there's another concept, and that's much more complicated. That's called ke'ein hamada b'din. And now what we're doing is we're fast-forwarding. we're no longer focused on the value of the object as it were at the moment he took it from the base pilon, the moment he stole it, or in the case of Kohen Tanis Kanef, because the moment that he took the Shvua Sheker to support his claim that it was stolen. But now we're going forward in time, and we're asking what was the value of the object at a later period of time. Now, what is this later period of time? So in the language of the Shas, it's called Shas HaModa B'din. Again, Shas is Shin Samach, and Shas HaModa B'din is Shin Ayin Tov. So the Shas HaModa B'din means one of two things. And here is a machlokas, a great machlokas between the Rambam and the Rosh. One school of thought, that's the Rambam Shita, is that Shas HaModa B'din means literally when the witnesses come in, and based on their claim, we can accuse the Ganav, Shakuz, you know, that he stole the object, or in the case of Toin Tainis, we could be cut on. The Edom say that, you know, the Shomer himself has the object hidden away in his safe, as you say. That's the Ramam Shita Shas HaModa B'din. The Rosh Shita is a little more complicated, and he says that Shas HaModa B'din means the moment that the object was destroyed. But before we get into this, we'll see the Rosh soon. What I'm trying to establish here as an introduction to Rav is that there are two time periods. We'll call them time T1 and time T2. And when we want to evaluate Kerem, Kefel, and Dalet Vehei, we always have to ask ourselves, what is the critical time period? Why? Because an object varies, fluctuates in its value. The value of an object fluctuates. At time T1, it may be worth X. At time T2, it may be worth Y. It may have gone up in value from T1 to T2. It may have gone down in value. Now, we live in a capitalistic economics society, so we know that market conditions will determine the value of an object. Law of supply and demand. Let's say, for example, there's a dearth of oxen on the market, so the farmers are out there, you know, they're paying double the price or 400% of the price of the ox in order to purchase, to obtain an ox. That's called, in the Lashon HaShas, that's called yukra. Yukra means it went up. And then there's something called zula. Maybe, you know, somebody from one of these big, you know, farming areas, you know, came and he's flooding the market with oxen, and the value of the oxen went down. That's called Zula. So our issue is going to be when the object goes either down or up in value, what is the critical koveya, the shah hakovas? What determines how much the ganav should be paying in Keren, in Kefel, in Chomsh? Should it be the earlier time period? The earliest time period is the Shas Hotzomi Beis Bailim, the moment that the Ganav took it out of the house of its owner. Or should it be the later time period, which is called Shas HaModa B'din? Whatever HaModa B'din means, we'll see the Rambam and the Rosh. And the premise before Rav, this is the pre-Rav premise, is that all three form one individual package. Meaning Keren, Kefel, and Dalet Vehei are all engendered by one Maisa Gneva. Again, obviously, he took the Gneva to a higher realm, you know, to a higher level in the case of Tvicha Umechira, Dalet Vehei. But be that as it may, what sets Dalet Vehei or Tvicha Mechira into motion is the Gneva itself. And if the laws of Gneva determine the Chiyuve Gneva, then we should subsume not only Keren, but even Kefel, not only Kefel, but even Dalet Vehei under what we call Chiyuve Gneva. And therefore, whatever rules govern Chiyuve Gneva, how much should the Ganav be chayv to pay, they should apply straight across the board to all Chiyuve Gneva. That's before we see Rav. And now we see Rav Gufam a Rav. So Zevi came in just in time. So we're on Daf Samach Hey, line 5. This was the Shia I was meant to give last Yom Shlishi, but I wasn't up to it. Amar Rav, Keren Ke'en Sheganav, Tashlumei kefel v'tashlumei arba v'chamisha kishas hamada b'din. And to utilize the famous brisket terminology, tzvei dinim, comes along, Rabbi, and he splits up chiyuve gneva into two categories. We're mistaken, says Rav, and the question is if Rav is operating with Gzeres HaKosuf here, and he's deriving from Psukim, is Rav going to operate with a breakthrough in Svara, in logic? I don't know. That's something that we have to analyze as we go through the sugya, but Rav has a breakthrough here. You think that all Chiyuve Gneva are made of Miksha Achas, of the same ilk? No! Let's split it into two categories. One category is the category called Keren, and the other category is called Kefel et Tashlumei Dal Vehe. And once I break those down into two separate categories, and it's not all one, as we said before, one unit of Chiyuve Gneva, then different rules and regulations will apply. So for example, says Rav, the earlier time period, which we call T1, which Kishas Hotsomi based Pilum, is going to determine Keren. But the later time period, which is called Shas Hamad Bedin, that's going to determine Kefel and Dalve. And the question is why?
It's market forces. It may be worth more later or less.
Right, but well, again, I'm not going into that question yet. If it went up in value, went down in value, Hukra, Yukra, was it through Akasha that he physically beat up the animal, or was it Shmina, he fed the animal, Pitu, you know, he's Mefate in the animal, he fed it well, you know. But in Harvey, and what I want you to be with me together here on the same page is that just conceptually, what Rav is doing, I call this the Rav sledgehammer. Because what Rav is doing is he's taking a patish and he's taking chiyuve gneva and he's smashing them into two. We thought that they were one entity, and again, whether you're in favor of the earlier time period, the later time period, Shas Otzomi Beis Bailim, which is called Ke'ein Sheganav, or Shas Hamad Bedin, whatever that means, the later time period, whichever way you go, we're going to have to rack our brains and figure out why am I inclined to go this way, the earlier time period, the later time period, but be consistent about it, Ribono Shel Olam. Whatever time period you want to use, apply it consistently to both Keren and to the rest of the Chiyuve Gneva. No, says Rav. Don't make that mistake. You're falling into a pach here, because Keren Lechud and the other Chiyuve Gneva, which we call Kefel Adal Vehe Lechud. So let's look at the Gemara inside. So Keren, he says, is Ke'en Sheganav. How much is it worth when he took it out of the base violin? Oh. Now here I want to point out, if you can make a note of it, and believe that, maybe we'll come back to this, Tosis in Masechta Bava Metzia, not here, says that if the Gneva is still alive and well, then Veheshev Sagzela Shargaz, he returns to the Nignav, the Gneva, and story over. It matters not whether the Gneva is worth more today or less today than it was Kain Shagana. Exactly. And I think that what Tosis has in mind is that this is simply an application of the famous case of Gazal Chametz V'Avol of a Pesach. A man steals Chametz before Pesach. It's worth, you know, a great deal.
Especially if it's Scotch whiskey.
Oh, okay, Scotch whiskey, right. Yeah. Very, very good. I wasn't even thinking. I was thinking of Chiffon's Bakery in Brooklyn, New York. Okay, fine. Of a good piece of pastry, you know. Worth a lot of money. What's it worth today? Pesach have passed. It's Chomet Shalom of Pesach. Again, I'm not going into the details of Chomet Shalom of Pesach. It's the rice, it's Rabbanon, Knas, whatever it is. It's Bailim. And it's worth nothing. It's also Bailim. Lom and Zog. As the Gemara says, the Ganav has the right to say, Areshal Cholofana. The Heshiv Zagzela Shargaz.
You can take it.
Take it or leave it. It's yours. You have to take it and sell it, or if you can't sell it, you're stuck with it. So Tosef Bamitzi applies that rule, Kach Nirul and Fiat Yizdaiti, to this case. He says, Rav of Ke'en Sheganav, which means, let's say in the case of Yukra, let's say, for example, Let's take the other case. That's the case of Huzla. So the Gneva, when he stole it, was worth 4. Today, when he returns it, it's worth 1. Rav says he has to make up the difference, because he has to pay Ke'en, Keren, Ke'en She'er, Ganav. So he's not going to get away with paying 1. Says Tosis, that's only because what happened to the object? It's lost. If the object exists, is less man de polig, ain't amal daber, there's no discussion here. Harei shall call fanech, v'heshev zagzela, and don't give me kein shagun. If has nothing to do kein shagun, I have kein hamon abedin. That whole distinction is totally irrelevant. Our sugya of Rav, says Tosis, addresses a case where the object that was stolen is gone. It's avad min olam. And as a result, the question is, what should he pay? Should he pay the value of the object? Well, for sure, that's Karen. Does he pay the object, the value of the object, as it were, at the moment of the stealing? Which makes a lot of sense, because what's the machayev of Karen? Why is the gan of chayev Karen?
Because of the theft.
So the maisa gneva itself is the machayev, and therefore let's look at the tashlumen of the maisa gzela. In other words, the shavius, correct, the value of the object of shas gzela. So that makes sense, and there could be a very strong logical argument in favor of Rav's ke'en she'ganav. Or no, should we say something else? Should we say that this gneva requires us to postpone the evaluation of the object until a later period of time, because although there's something called a maisa machayev, but then there's something called a chiyuv, and the chiyuv is not yet set in stone, because we haven't yet clarified.
We haven't estimated it.
And we also haven't, we have no evidence yet that he in fact is the ganav. You know, when that whole process takes place, then we'll determine the later value of the object. So says Rav, no. Is Karen Kain? Kain what? Shagun.
There isn't any thought to say that we have to make the owner whole. Meaning, if he stole something which it would take 200 to buy the same thing back, and the value then was 100, then you're not returning. He's not whole again. He can't.
Right. So that's Rav. Rav says Karen Kain Shagun.
I'm saying, in other words, you stole something that's worth 100, and the day you stole it was 100. Now, right. Later it's worth 200. But if you gave me 100 because I ain't your gun, I can't replace what it is. I mean, I need to be made to be whole again.
Excellent. So that would be the svara to say ke'en hamor bedin, meaning to postpone the value. Okay. And based yichil on your logic, it makes sense that the Gemara is going to ask minan imili. The Gemara is not satisfied with innate, intuitive logic to establish Rav's principle of Karen Shein Shagana. And in fact, if you've seen the Sugya, Rav will say, what's the key word in the Torah, in the scriptures, that's going to teach us Karen Shagana? Chaim. So the word Chaim, so a word that's like out of place, in the Chumash. And Rashi's going to say, Chaim is Hachye, we have to resuscitate the animal that no longer exists and go back to the Maisignet. Now we get to Kefel and Dalet Vehei, Kein Hamor Abedin, Kishas Hamor Abedin. So what's Kishas Hamor Abedin? So let me just read to you the Rambam Shita of Kishas Hamor Abedin and the Rosh Hashita. The Rosh Hashita is that kishas hamod v'din le'inyin chiyuv dalet v'hei hishas hatvicha. In other words, the Rosh, in a sense, is rewriting the text of the Gemara, and we're going to spend a lot of time trying to figure out why the Rosh did such a thing. But just to make life simple for ourselves, the bottom line, according to the Rosh, you cannot take this Gemara literally and identify shas hamod v'din as the moment that the Edom came in to testify against the Ganav, but rather Shas Hamor Abedin is the moment in which the Ganav shechted the animal. He slaughtered the animal. Okay? That's what we know so far. The Rambam Shita, on the other hand, is that what's kishas habada bedin? Kishas shebo ha'edim lebezdin lahayd al gnev. At the moment that the edim came in to testify for the gnev. What process begins with the ha'adas edim? Now, you and I would have said maybe there's a process, the process begins even earlier. But at least from the Rambam's perspective, what is the process that I have in mind?
Admission.
No, what I'm saying is there's a long process until finally we can get the money on the table, so to speak, you know, get the gadav to pay up. But what is that process called? What are we interested in? Bezdin, right? That's the process of Bezdin. Now, why would Bezdin play such an important role? And here's the question that I want to ask. I'm leading up to this question because maybe I'm not being clear. We can view the role of Bezdin in one of two ways. One is what I call declarative, okay, I'll explain, and the other is what I call constructive. The difference is that when you declare something, that's just a formal process. When you construct something, then in effect you are creating something that didn't exist before. So for example, if I go to a notary public to have a document notarized, how I did? So what is that? Is that constructive or declarative? You know, what is the notary public really doing here? What role, what function is he playing? He is just declaring something. It's purely a declaration. He's not constructing, he's not creating something. So for example, when we talk about a Maisa HaMachayev, that's something constructive. There was no Chiyuv there before, and you've created a Chiyuv. When you talk about schlepping someone to Bezdin to pay up, or for example, let's say the Lova owes the Malva 1,000, and the Malva now produces a Shtar, and he takes it to Bezdin to force the Lova to pay up the 1,000, what role is Bezdin playing over here? Are they creating a new Chiyuv? When they point their finger at the Lova, and they say, you better pay up the 1,000, you're right out the check now, what role is Bezdin playing?
Declarative.
They're only declaring something. You know, we need to go through a formal process because otherwise the Malv has no recourse to get his money back. He needs Bezdin to, you know, as the arm of the government, so to speak, you know, the judiciary, the executive. But there's one exception to the rule. And what's that called? Knas. In the case of Knas, Kefel, Dalet Vehei, and many, many other Knossos, there Bezdin plays a different role. They're not declarative. They play a much more fundamental role. They are constructive. That's called Kiyum HaDofer. Kiyum HaDofer means to create a Chiyuv. And I'll prove it to you. The halach is that Moda B'Knas is Potter. If the plaintiff sues the defendant admits guilt, he confesses payment, you know, the ask, then there's no Chiyuv Knas. He exempts himself from Knas. The reason for that is because Bezdin cannot create a Chiyuv Knas, what I call constructive, if all the evidence is already on the table. For all intents and purposes, he should be Chayiv already. The fact that Knas is so fundamentally different that Mode of Knas is part of from a Chiyuv Mamon means that the role of Bezdin in the case of Knas is to create the Chiyuv. So if, for example, there is no Hodah on the part of the Gadav, he's not willing to come forward and confess his crime, we need Bezdin to create. Now wait a minute, that's not true. Bezdin will declare that he's the Gadav, and how do they do so? Because through this whole court case they determine that he is the Gadav, and they point the accusing finger. And therefore they say return the Gneva, or if the Gneva is lost, pay its value. That's called Keren, Ke'en She'gona. But then Bezdin plays a higher role. And now they transcend to the level of constructing to create a Chiyuv. We're beyond Keren now, we're in the realm of what? Knas, whether it's Kefel, whether it's Dalet Vehei, in the case of Tficha Mechira. Here Bezdin creates a brand new Chiyuv. Now, that process of Bezdin, which is going to allow Bezdin to create that Chiyuv Knas, begins with what? When does the juridic process begin, if there is such a word?
With Aiden.
I would have said intuitively with the claim of the plaintiff. You know what we, you know, every Bezdin, every yeshiva's Bezdin has to begin with Reuven being Tovea Shimon. But what we see in our sugya is that in Hilchas Knas, at least vis-a-vis Knas, where Bezdin plays this unique role to establish a chiv that didn't exist before, what I call constructive. In Hebrew, we would say Beitin Yotzrim et achiv. They're not just clarifying, they're being Makayim the chiv. Here, the key or the kickoff to Bezdin is Ha'odas Eid.
And
Ha'odas Eidim, when Bezdin, that this is the Rambam Shita in Kishas Hamor Bedin, when Bezdin received Eidim and accepting this testimony, again through the process of Chakira and Drisha of investigating the Eidim, that's when Bezdin are
detached.
No, just one second. Are empowered. Are authorized, are empowered to create a chiv. So even though the chiv itself emerges only with the gmar din, when Bezdin actually, at the end of the process, accepted the eidim, etc., etc., and then determines, you know, they take the gravel and they hit it down and they say, you know, we took an amidah din, you know, and then we took a vote and we determined that he's chayiv kefel, he's chayiv dalvehei. That's the moment the chiv actually emerges. But the process by which that chiyuv will eventually emerge, meaning the ma'aseh bezdin itself, begins with ha'odas eid. That's the shitas haRambam in this sugya of ha'odas eid. So ask yourself the following two questions: why does Rav say that keren kein shegana? Question number one. Number two: why does Rav say that kefel and dal vehei is ke'ein hamod bedin? As far as Karen is concerned, Rav says there's one category of Chiyuv Ganav, and the determining what we call time period of T1 is Kishas Hagneva. There we are totally focused, you know, exclusively, exhaustively focused on the Maisa Gneva. What did he steal? What was it valued at the time that he stole it? That's the end of the story. You want to introduce Bezdin and Edom and all that? That's already declarative. That's already evidence. That's already to clarify that everything took that. That's clarification. That's what I call a technical. Then says Rav, but when you talk about Kefel and Dalet Vehei, you're no longer in the realm of what I call declarative. You're no longer just bringing evidence. You are in the process of creating a chiyuv, and who is going to be authorized and empowered to create that chiyuv? Bezdin. And therefore the critical time period is not T1 for Shas Gneva, but rather T2, which I call Shas HaModa Bedin. But then I have a problem. If this is Rav, I don't know how to read the next three words in the Gemara. Because the Gemara says, my time of the Rav. I would say that it's about seven lines down from the top of the page. You know, and I don't have a Gemara that has the numbers on the line, so you just have to sort of. But if you count, Harvey, about six lines down from the top of the page, you'll see my time of the Rav. You have it? Now, this is a point in Derech HaLimud that, you know, when you develop a methodology of learning the Talmud, learning the Gemara, you know that if the Gemara asks my time of the Rav, the Gemara is bothered by something. And in fact, the Gemara, but in order to answer this question of my time with the Rav, the Gemara is going to have to quote a very sophisticated drasha, Yalfusa, to derive Rav's conclusion. See, here I want to point out to you Tosus Dibra Maskel Gufa. And on the second of the wide lines, he says, Yeshlomar de'ikar Rav. Now, I am going to add, you know, if I'm going to use my literary license here to add a word to Tosis. Ikar chidusho shel Rav. Okay, Mitch, you have to help me out over here because we need a buddy system here because
it's the same.
The Ikar Rav, meaning
second wide line.
What is the Chiddush of Rav? Or let's reformulate that. What would I have thought without Rav? And Rav comes lafuki. Says Tosfos, Ikar Rav lo osel lashminen ele tashlume kefel v'tashlume arba v'chamisha kishas hamada v'din. This appellant. Tosfos says the exact opposite of what I think would have been our natural intuitive inclination. I thought that the halach of kefel and tashlumei dalet vehei kishas hamada v'din is simply an application of this concept, of this principle, that Beis Din is playing the role of creating a new chiyuv. But Tosfos says no. We would never have said such a thing. We would have said logically that kefel and dalet vehei should be, if not for Rav, kishas. And again, the only explanation I could offer you for this Tosfos, and you'll see in a minute how Tosfos is going to do somersaults in the air in order to reinterpret the whole Gemara so that you can somehow fit his pshat into the Gemara. He's really working hard here to push it in. I think what Tosfos means is that once we've established something called a Maisa Gneva with a Chiyuv Tashlume Ganov, then there should be one indivisible package. If we assume, and Tosfos thinks it's absolutely compelling, logically compelling to assume, that Ke'en Sheganav. Why Ke'en Sheganav? Because at the end of the day, why is he Chayav? He's Chayav because he's a Ganav. That very critical moment in which he schlepped the Yenim's ox out of his shed, and he took it and absconded with it. That's where the whole chiyuv of Ganav exists. Even though, again, as I emphasized before, you're going to need tvicha or mechira later on. But all that is just in a sense, a strengthening or an extension of the really original inherent chiyuv. The inherent chiyuv is the gneva. And this one package deal. That was my initial... David, you weren't here when I started, but Zev, were you here when I started? I wanted to suggest that the compelling logic here, without Rav, would have been that all three, that means Keren, Kefal, and Dalpe, are all one and the same. Whatever rules govern, whether it's Shas Gneva, whether it's Shas Hamad Bedin, whichever way you want to go, who's La Hukra, I don't care which way. But you've got to be consistent. Why? Because all three are classified, are defined, Al Pidin, as Chiyuve Ganav. This is what the Ganav has to pay, Tashlume Gneva. So if your Tashlume Gneva is going to be set in stone by T1, let it be T2, let it be T2. You take your choice, flip a coin. But whatever it is, be consistent about it. And just 1 second, Zev, I'll be right with you. And Tosfos is so convinced. Let me read to you the Tosfos again. The Ikar Rav lo osel shminen ela tashlume kefel v'tashlume arba v'chamisha kishas hamada b'din. The way I'm interpreting Tosfos is that the breakthrough of Rav, the Chiddush of Rav, is that kefel and dal vehei fall into a new category. They break new ground. It's a machayev b'fnei atzma. It's a brand new chiyuv, which is very strange in the case of kefel. Yeah, I can hear it in the case of dalet vehei when he intervenes with a maisa tvicha, maisa mechira. Oh, v'hoda ka'amar my taima derav. So now let's go back to our line in the Gemara. Again, I quoted this Tosfos not because of Gufa, but because of my taima derav. Says Tosfos, you know what my taima derav means? My taima derav, that kefel and dalet vehei should have a different determining moment as far as evaluating the chiyuv of kefel and dalet vehei, then Karen. It should be all the same. But that's a little bit strange. Because let's look at the Gemara's answer. Omar kra gneva v'chayim. Let's read the whole pasuk inside. The pasuk says, "Mimotze timotze biyodo ha gneva, mishar ad chabar ad se chayim." So the Torah adds another word, l'chaim. All right, we'll drink a l'chaim on it. But what's the extra word l'chaim doing here? Says Rav, what does it mean? Amai ka'amar achmana chayim v'gneva. Why did the Torah introduce the word chayim here in the case of gneva? Achye l'keren ke'en sheganav. Rashi says, achye l'keren hachye. You know, let's bring it back to life. The object again is destroyed. Again, Tosef b'Metzia, if the object is still alive, hareshel kolafanecha, correct? The object is lost. Make up the difference in price, correct? If, let's say, for example, it was worth 100, now it went down to 50, you're going to have to give him 50 plus another 50 in order to fulfill your obligation of what? Of Karen. And we're going to resurrect the animal from the dead and figure out what it was worth at the moment, the critical moment of Gneva when he took it out of the Rishos Pilot. No, Rabosai, come on. What is Rav trying to answer here? What question is Rav answering? What question of my timer is Rav answering here?
Sounds like Karen.
Sounds like Karen, no? Tosu says, Hachi Perusho. Look how he works overtime to fit this in. Amar kra gneva v'chayim, achye le'keren, underline the word le'keren, ke'en shegodav, mashma dafka le'keren, v'lo le'tash le'vidal v'hei. Not that the way you would have read the Torah, you would have read the Gemara, that the Achi LeKeren is coming to establish a brand new halacha of Keren Kein Shekonav. No, that was Muvan Me'lav. The Vaisa Gnev is Machayev. That's when the Chiyuv is set in stone. We just need evidence to prove that he's the Ganav, and he'll pay Kein Shekonav. If it went down, okay, it went down in price, now he has to make up the difference. It went up in price, he always has to pay the original price, Kein Shekonav. That was okay. But the Gemara is learning that the word Chayim is a mute. When do we go back to Kain Shaganav? That's only with regard to Karen. But with regard to Dal Vehei, then we have a different halacha. And by default, that's because the Gemara only recognizes two T's, right? Two time periods. There's either T1, which is Kain Shaganav, or T2, which is Kain Hamad of the Din. Go ahead, sir.
But we could only say it's Tzvai Dinim because Karen is Mammon. And Kefir is Knas. So you can easily say it's two separate things.
Correct.
The payment may look the same, but right. one is Chiyuv Mamun.
And that's why Zev, I was inclined to what Yechiel was saying before, that Faker, not like Tosis. The Gemara was looking for a Pasuk to establish Keren Shein Ganav. Because after all, the Nignav, right, the plaintiff here in this case, has a valid argument. Why should I lose if it, for example, if it went down in price, or let's say if it went up in price, right? That was the case. If it went up in price, because now you're going to pay me Kein Shaganav, and what am I going to get? I get a half an ox, you know, I get the head of an ox, you know, for the same price that I could have gotten a year ago when you stole it, but today, or I could have gotten a full ox, you know, for that price, and now I could have get half an ox. So again, Lefianius Daiti, the simple pshat in the Gemara, just reading it straightforward, would be my time with the Rav Kein Shaganav. And for the Dalet Vehei, we have Zev Svara, that Dalet Vehei is a chiv that's created by whom? By Bezdin. And when does Bezdin jump into the arena and begin the process which culminates in establishing this brand new chiv? That's called Hamad Abedin. Tosis doesn't want to learn. Okay, then that's what I wanted to share with you at this particular point. Now, the bottom line here, as we move forward in this sugya, is that Rav has tzvei din. Again, what was the intuitive logic this way, that way? That was our whole discussion. But we have now two categories. We have one category called Karen, and the chiyuve tashlume ganav of Karen are set in stone at the moment of the gneva. And we have another set of chiyuvim that are governed by different rules called kefal and dalve. And that's ke'en hamod v'din. Fine. The Gemara at this point doesn't know exactly how broad of a scope is Rav covering. Meaning, the Gemara is going to assume, until it knows otherwise, until it can prove otherwise, that Rav made his statement straight across the board, without exception. under all circumstances, keren is kein sheganav, kefol and dalve is kein hamodabite. Under all circumstances. Okay. So the Gemara says, Omar Rav Sheshes, wait a second. Rav Sheshes says, I cannot accept Rav. Rav is contradicted by a braisa. It's very fascinating to me the way the Amoraim speak. I mean, trust me, Rabosai, you and I have no clue of the sanctity of Rav. I mean, if I had an hour, I would just talk to you about the Kedusha of Rav. I mean, Rav was on a different planet. And look what Rav Sheshet says about Rav, without blinking. Amin, I said, Ki noyim v'shachiv Rav, amal hashmaitizah. Yeah, it's almost like saying he was drunk when he said it. You know, he was half asleep, half awake. Yeah, maybe because they were poking him or whatever was going on over there. This time you have a brisa. What does the brisa say? Kusha vishmina. You had an animal that was lean, and then he fattened it up. So obviously the animal went up in value, correct? Says the brisa, Mishalim tashlume kefel, v'tashlume arba v'chachmisha ke'ein shagav. Is the brisa's mefurash against Rav? In other words, we go back to the Shas Gneva when the animal was Khusha, and it'll pay the lower price. That would be good if we were talking about Karen, but the price explicitly is addressing the case of Kefel and Dalet Vehe. Amri is kind of like this general, you know, the defendants of Rav over here, you know, the pro-Rav Miflaga. He says, Mishum the Amar Le. So now, before we go on to Bishum the Amar Le, I just want to point out, just to, you know, to set the framework of our sugya, what the Gemara now is about to do, and we're going to see this over and over again, is to whittle down Rav. Now, we started with the assumption that Rav is broad scope. Now we're going to whittle it down, and Rav is at the end of the day, is going to be very, very limited. It's going to have to do with market fluctuation prices and so forth, but nothing else. Oh. So now, let's just see what's going on. We have a halacha, there's also a sugya bab metziah, called Hayored L'Sof Sada Shel Chaver. It's a phenomenal scenario. I can't even close my eyes and imagine why anyone would do this, but somebody goes down to his friend's field, uninvited, and he's, you know, like a good Samaritan, he starts working. He starts plowing the field, he starts planting, he harvests. That's called Yored L'Sof Sada Shel Chaver. So if I was the bailim, the owner of the field, I would wake up the next morning and say, Yashikara, but go fly a kite. I don't owe you anything. Did I hire you? Were you in my employment? And you should know that Niske Hilchas Shchenim mostly revolve around this. You know, you have what we call a Vada Bayit. I don't know if anyone here is bold enough to admit that they suffer from the... No, I mean, they appreciate the Vada Bayit. But, you know, the Vada Bayit decides that we have to make improvements and this and that. And I you know, I'm a misnagid. I don't need it. You know, Mali, you know, I don't want to pay these prices. So that's the sugi of Yored L'Sof Sada Shel Chaver. So it's an amazing sugi because the Gemara says that there are two variables in that sugi. One is called Hotzah and one is called Shevach. Hotzah means the amount of money it cost him, this Yored, to, you know, the expenditures that he spent in order to improve his friend's home improvement, you know, uninvited, unsolicited. And the other element is called shvach. Shvach means how much the land increased or appreciated in its value on the market. And basically, the halacha is that the yored has a right to sue for payment, but it's Yado al helyon, meaning he'll always pay. He'll always get paid the lesser of the two. So let's say, for example, if the shvach is lesser, is a smaller number than the expenditures, then otzah, he'll only be able to collect shvach. If on the other hand, the expenditures is, so he'll collect expenditures. So that's the sugi of yored l'sof sada. So now we have an even stranger kind of situation. Maybe it's not stranger. We have a ganav, right? He's not a great tzaddik. He's a ganav. And he went ahead and decided that he's going to fatten up the animal. That's called Chusha Vishmina. So the word Ishmina means not in the descriptive, but in the causative, right? Hishmina, hu hishminota. And what he did was he actually fattened up the animal. Now let's just think about this logically. The value of the animal went up. Then the ganav after the culmination of the appreciation of the animal through his pitum, through fattening the animal, he went and he sold the animal, or he shechted the animal. So we now should apply the principle of Rav. Now what happens if we apply the principle of Rav? The animal went up from 1 to 4. And now you're going to have to pay kefal and dal vehei kishas. What's Rav Shita? Hamad b'din. That's time T2. That's number 4, right? So multiply that by 4. You know, you're up to 16. I mean, you know, it's like a massive amount of money. And why? Because the ganav fattened up the shor. So the Gemara says the Amar Leh, that in this case, we have to listen to what the ganav has to say. Usually, who cares what the ganav has to say? But we're going to invite the ganav into Beis Din, and what's he going to claim? He's going to claim, Ana pitimna, I fattened up the animal, I took money out of my pocket in order to buy, you know, alfalfa or barley for the camel. V'at shaklis, and now you're going to bill me for that?
Yeah.
On the other, okay, one second, Shalom. But the flip side is that if I can't sue you, so to speak, or demand from you, yorei l'tol son shel chavero, we have to see exactly why not. But chach, I don't have to be penalized for it. In other words, we're going from one extreme to the other. Normally, if I take your animal and I fatten it up, you got to pay me for that. Either pay me hotzos or pay me shvach, depending on which is less. Here you want to go to the other extreme. I fattened up your animal, now you're going to bill me for it, multiply that by 4 under the law of tavach u'machar. So the Rishonim here say the following. This is very fascinating. And I want to read this to you inside. He says the following. Hapitum hazeh, right? We're learning Pitum HaKetores here. Eino shel bala behema. He's quoting the Meiri and other Rishonim. Haganav chayav, listen carefully, b'tashlume, kefel v'dal ve'al mashe, afal mashe lo hotzi b'beis bailim. Even though, according to Rav's breakthrough, you pay dalet ve'hei on, right, on additional value, let's say if the animal appreciated, from Shas Gneva, Hotzavi Beis Pail, until Shas Hamad Abedin. But Dafke Im Lo Hishbicha, Al Yidea Gneva B'maisa B'yoda. If the Ganav was Mashbiach, the animal, and that's why the animal appreciated, then Hapitum Hazeh Eino Shayach L'Bal HaBehema. It's unbelievable. The Meiri is saying, now let's analyze this. The animal went up in price from the time of the Gneva until the time of Tvicha Mechira. Why did it go up in price? Because the Ganav fattened the animal. So now, on the one hand, we're saying that the Ganav will have to pay an appreciation, we'll call this Yukra, let's say market fluctuation, that the Ganav is going to have to pay Dal Vey according to Rav, and that the Gemara is Maskana later on. But if the yukra here was not a natural yukra as a result of fluctuation in market conditions, but rather was a result of the pitum of the ganav, then a whole new din emerges. What is this din? Ask yourself the following question, and there's no simple answer to this question, Rav Moshe. Who owns the animal at the time of the Tvicha Mechira? Right, the animal was very lean and skinny. It was worth 1. Now at the time of Tvicha Mechira, it's worth 4. Who owns those 4 zuzim? And it's a very complicated answer. It depends. If the 4 zuzim went up as a result of what? Natural fluctuation in economic conditions. Who owns the yukra? The violent. And therefore, now B'shas Hamad Abedin, when Beis Din wants to cancel him, you know, good bum, you know, the Tvicha Mechira here, and Beis Din creates a new chiyuv, they're going to establish it at the value of 4, because those 4 zuzim belong to the Nignav. But if you ask me again, who owns the four zuzim? The answer is name. It's not necessarily so. Those four zuzim, or three out of the four, I should say, are owned by whom?
Right.
By the God of Himself. Why? Because Pitu. In other words, this is an and this is, I think, the breakthrough of the whole sugya, Rabbo. So everything we're going to do in the Hemshech HaSugya is all predicated on this breakthrough. And I'm sweating it out here to try to explain it. The Gemara is making a fundamental distinction. The Gemara is making, if the animal naturally goes up in value, again in the case of Yukra, we'll see later on about the case of Huzla, but in the case of Yukra, so all that accrues to the owner of the animal. If I own this this object and it goes up in value, it's mine, like Aroy Ashbach, right? But if the Ganov now sinks in money into the object, and as a result of that money, the object goes up in value, that increment in the value of the object accrues to whom? Is owned by whom? By the Ganov. Why? Right. How can I make a profit on your animal?
Right. You shouldn't.
So what's the answer on both sides? I think there's only one answer to explain this meeting. Exactly. Kinyone Gzeva. You see, there's a halachic entity here, a halachic dimension or element that we haven't even touched on, which opens up new worlds. And half of the Masechet Bava Kamma, the second half, not the half that we did, you know, they always say to the guy, you know, they bring him for a shidduch and they say, well, he knows half shots. So they test him, he doesn't know anything. He says, well, I learned the other half of shots. Right? So we were allowed to say we don't know anything about Kinyan Gzeila because we didn't do the second half of Bava Kamma. But all of Bava Kamma, all of the second half of Bava Kamma is predicated on this breakthrough concept, which is absolutely antithetical to intuitive secular civil law, that the Ganav actually owns the object. Again, it's a very complicated kind of ownership, because on the one hand, he's chayv and hashova, he has to return the object. So how can you say it's yours when you have to return it? But on the other hand, he can get benefits from the object. And this is going to all break into the sugya of shinui, Shini Rishus and Shini Hashem. We touched on it here in this room, I don't know, a year or two ago in Lulav HaGozel, you know, that we spoke about Kinyan Gzeila. If let's say, for example, somebody cuts down the Hadassim of somebody else illegally, whether he could use those Hadassim for Lachem, because Meikara before he cut it down, it was Mechubal HaKak, and now there's a new shame. And we're going to talk later on, I don't know if we'll get to it today or another day, about the, you know, he stole a tleh and now it became an aisle and so forth and so on, whether or not he's kodesh b'shinui and so forth and so on. So there's a brand new halacha here called pitum. And that pitum only makes sense within the framework, within the context of kinyan gneva. Such that now you can't, it says the God, if you can't bill me for Dalet Vehei times the object's value today after Hishmina, because I put that money in, that's my little investment in this ox or whatever the animal might be, and it accrues to me. You can bill me and penalize me times the object's value, but only if that value accrues to the Nignav. For example, in the case of Yukra v'Huz.
It still seems counterintuitive. It just doesn't seem fair that you can steal something and then benefit from the fact that you stole it. It's lahavdil haratzachta v'gam yirashta. Right? It's like, I stole it from you, but now, you know what? Now I'm benefiting from it.
But keep in mind,
you have to give it back.
It's only a theoretical benefit. I'll tell you why it's a theoretical benefit. Why? Because if the object still exists and it's this fat ox, let's say in the case of Kefel, forget about Dal Vehe, or Mechira, let's say he gets it back from the Lokev. So in that case, it's Hareshel Cholfanechen, he's going to have to give him back the fat ox. Don't think for one moment, Shalom, that he's going to now bill the Nignav and say, well, I want a reimbursement, a payback on the three Zuzim. That's not what we're saying. The entire discussion here is really up in the air. It's very conceptual, very theoretical. The question is only, how do we measure a knas? Do we measure a knas by the object's value that, shall we say, ethically belongs to the Nignav, or by the object's value, at least in a certain sense? Not that the Chas Shalom, that the Ganav is coming out with three zuzim in his pocket. Forget about that. You know, just that now you want to bounce back those three zuzim, multiply it by four because he shechted the animal. That you don't have to.
The other part of it is that it's a hefek. You know, if he killed the animal, right, now the animal's worthless. In other words, I had an ox or whatever it was, you know, it was worth $100, 100 zuzim, right, and killed it. Now it's the carcass is worth nothing, right? So now if I have to pay the knas on the arba of the hay, on the value of the carcass, which has now gone down tremendously, again, it's a benefit. And that seems unfair.
Well, again, I don't want to call it a benefit already, because, again, this is all profit that the Nigzal is making on Dalveh. So the question is really not benefiting, but how much of a penalty we should impose on the Gazlan.
Right.
And it doesn't make sense to penalize the Gazlan for monies that he spent to improve the animal. That's the logic of the Gemara. Well, let's go on because, you know, the clock is ticking. Toshma. We're still not out in the clear with Rav. Why? The Braisa says if you steal an animal shmena, okay, this is a flip case, vikhisha. Now again, the word vikhisha, you know, the mapik hey means an active beating up. Rashi says, if you take a look at Rashi, vikhisha, Rashi says, biyadayim, five lines from the top, bitorach malach v'makel. So now the Nigzal is actively responsible for beating up this animal and reducing its value from four down to one. Is Mishalim Tashlume Kefel with Tashlume Arba with Hamisha Ke'en Shaganav. Wait a second, Rav just finished telling us that you pay Dal Vehe Ke'en Hamad Abedin. Here you see Mefurish in the Brice, you pay Kishas Neva. And again, all this is the agenda to say that all chiyuvim should be one and the same, an indivisible unit. And the Gemara answers, Hasam Nami, the same thing. We have a logic here, but now again, it's not the logic of the Ganav who's speaking up here, but rather the logic of the Nignav. His claim, the Amrina Le, he has the right to turn to the Ganav and say, Malik Tola Kula, Malik Tola Palga. That basically when you were beating up the animal, when you were abusing the animal or overworking the animal and causing it to become this skinny little lean animal, you know, reminds me of Yosef in the dreams over there, you know, Paro's dreams. So basically, you were really destroying the animal. Interesting language. The Gemara says Malik Tola Kula, Malik Tola Palga. You know, whether you actually killed the animal or you began the process of killing the animal. So if you take a look at Rashi, Dibra Maskel Malik Tola Palga, Rashi says at the end of the Rashi, he says, Aschala Leitvicha. In other words, when we determine, and this is beautiful according to the Rush, let's go back to the Rush again. The Rush, if you remember, was of the opinion that Shas Hamad Abedin is a substitute for what? Who remembers?
When it was broken.
Right. Well, we call it Tvicha. Okay? So now, when is the Shas Tvicha? When Rav says that Fidal Vehei, we're going to determine the value of Shas Tvicha, what is the Shas Tvicha? We assume the Shas Tvicha is much later on. Here's a case where the Shas Tvicha is very early on. It's early as the Shas Kneva. Because after he stole it, what did he do with the animal? He starts working the animal and beating the animal. Right? So at that point, he's already involved in Tvicha. Because Mali Ktola Palga, Mali Ktola Kula. And therefore, the Ascholas HaTvicha, says Rashi, takes place at the moment that he started being makdish the animal, which was the moment that the animal was worth four. And that's what Rav would say over here. Rav would admit that you pay Kishas Gneva. Again, when we say Kishas Gneva, you have to have a little bit of a liberal, you know, poetic license over here, because it doesn't... You can't take the Gemara literally b'shasha ganav, because we're talking about haskolas tvicha. From ganav to haskolas tvicha, it might have taken 5 minutes, it might have taken a day, it might have taken a week. But as soon as he started beating up the animal, that is considered tvicha. That's called haskolas tvicha. And Rashi says, once this haskolas tvicha, that's the moment that's going to set in stone how much of a knas of Dal Vehei is going to pay. Frankly speaking, I don't know how the Rambam is going to interpret this sugi, because the Rambam holds Hamad Abedin is much later on. It's when the Edom come into Bezdin. This sugi works a lot easier, a lot smoother, according to the Rosh. Ki koma Rav, biyukra vizulahu tekoma. This is the punchline of the whole sugi. Right? We were working very hard to come to this final conclusion. Rav's principle that you pay kishas hamoda b'din is natural, shall we say, fluctuations in the market conditions. Okay, then, which is, you know, a reflection of different, you know, economic variables that play a role over here.
Well, that means only when it goes from Yikur to Zilu?
Oh, that's the next one. Heichidam, what's your case? And the Gemara goes in two different directions. Ilema, if Rav is talking about a case of what we call Yukra, what's Yukra? Demei Kara Shavya Zuza, at the time the Geneva was worth one Zuzal Basof. Now, when we get to Tvicha Mechira, again I'm interpreting according to the Rush, is Shavya Arba Zuzi. So therefore he's going to pay 4 times 4. Is Keren Ke'en Sheganav? But the Keren itself, according to Rav, he pays Ke'en Sheganav. How much is it worth at the time of the Gneva? It's worth one Zuz. So far on both sides sounds very logical. The problem is going to be another statement of Rabbah, and how are we going to square Rav with Rabbah? But if not for Rabbah, in terms of the logic, independent logic of its own, this would make perfect sense. Because again, the Machayev of Keren is the Maisa Gneva. What was worth the time of Maisa Gneva? One. That's what he's going to pay. Dalet Vehei is a chiv that emerges as a knas on the Gavra to penalize him for his criminal act of Tvicha Mechira, and that emerges when Bezdin takes a look at the Tvicha Mechira. And at the Shas Tvicha Mechira, the object, the animal went up in value, so then he's got to pay, the Torah says you have to pay knas according reflecting that value. Well, the problem is, Lema Pliga de Rav Adarabba, which, by the way, would not be catastrophic. You know, Rav does not, you can't twist Rav's arm because Rav made a statement. And I'm always tempted to think that what the Gemara is trying to do is to reconcile Rabba with Rav. You know, Rabba, it's a chutzpah for Rabba to argue with Rav. The Omar Rabba, and Rav is addressing just exactly this case, but not an animal, but rather a barrel of wine. Haimain de Gazal Chavita de Chamer Michavre. The Gemara often uses wine as an example of something that fluctuates in price. I don't know if that's true in modern economic society, but there are definitely different values of wines. You know, you can pay, you can go to, go into this grocery store, pay 35 shekel for a bottle of wine. You can go into a fancy store and pay 1,000 shekel for a bottle of wine.
But that's not because of economics.
But that's not necessarily because of economic reasons. But I assume that anything that has a great deal of fluctuation of value is also commodity is going to be impacted by market conditions.
That's,
I don't know.
Stored for many years. So
what do you say?
From the time it's being stored, one would have thought the prices could change.
Right. Because you store it, and then the prices change. Yeah. I'm thinking back. I took three courses in economics in Queens College. Yeah. Before you were born, in any event, I quickly shifted my major after those three courses. Anyway, lema plead the rav, the amarav, high man the gozel chavita the chamer mechaver meikara. At the time, the gzeil shavia zuzu was worth one zuz. The basov shavia arba zuz. Exactly, our case went up in value. And Rabba says that tavre oshasye. If the ganav went ahead and he broke the barrel of wine, or he drank the barrel of wine, is mishalem, wait a second, mishalem arba, he pays arba. Okay, so what does that mean? That means that we view the shvira and the shasiya as some sort of a, okay, we'll see Rashi in a minute, as some sort of machayev. And the Machayev is the value at the time of the Shasiya, the time of the Tvira, the Shasiya, and that's 4 Zuzim. But Itbar Min Mela, let's say through no action on the part of the Gan of the barrel broke, is Mishalem Zuza. Right? So it means that he's Chayev for the Hotzah Sagzela Bibase Bailin. What was it worth at the time of the Hotzah Sagzela Bibase Bailin? It was only worth one Zuz. Anyway, what do we see clearly from Rabbah? Let's summarize Rabbah for our purposes. If the gazlan actively broke the object, then he pays 4 zuzim, the high price. It means that in the case of ganav shetavach, again, that's not the case of Rabbah, but let's just extrapolate by analogy. If the ganav shechted the animal, or he sold the animal, then he pays keren. Because again, Rabbah's talking about keren. He's not just talking about dal vehed, correct? Do you follow my point? This is a very critical point here. You know, it's a technical point, but we shouldn't miss it. When Rabbah says, Mishalim arba zuze, in the case of Tavra Shasya, he's talking about the entire price that he pays. Correct? Well, which means keren, right? Because there is no tvicha mechira in this case.
He's a gazlan, he's not a gazlan.
Or, and he's a gazlan too, he had that to boot. But what we're saying is that he pays kishas yukra, for the Karen as well. I mean, when I say for the Karen as well, there is only Karen, right? There is only Karen. Is that crystal clear? That has to be crystal clear. There's nothing to talk about here except for Karen. There's no Kefel, there's no Dal Vehei, there's only Karen. And yet, Rabba insists that he pays the higher price, right, of the Shas Shvira or Shsia, the Torah's Karen. So he's paying not Karen Ke'enche Gazal, because at the time that he took it out of the base Bailim, this barrel of wine, it was only worth one. He's paying Kishas Shvira Misa. The parallel in Gneva would be Kishas Tvicha Mechira, which means Kishas Tvicha Mechira, he should be paying the higher value. He should be paying the higher value. And according to Rav, yes, you pay the higher value for the knas, but not for the keren. Rav insists that as far as the keren is concerned, you pay ke'en shegonav. Now Rashi has a long presentation here to explain this kash of the Gemara. This is a Rashi Dima Maskel Tavra. Tavra biyadayim oshasi mishalim dalid ba mafkiv mefarish time the choma kama de isa bi'ena birshusei demara kaima. As long as the object is still intact, it's considered to be in the domain, in the possession of the Nignav. The boy laduri, because the Ganav doesn't have real full kinyane gineva, after all, he has to return it. Hilka b'shusi demari hukra, if it went up in value, it went up, that increment in value accrues to the owner of the object, the Nignav. Vahi shavra, vahi shaita, the shavre, the tavre, v'shasyoi, hudaka gozale. Now this to me is a pell of a Rashi. Rashi says that Tavre Oshasye is called Gzela. So I have two questions to ask. Question number one, why is it called Gzela? They didn't steal it. And question number two, why does Rashi feel compelled to introduce Gzela over here? But the simple pshat in this Gemara is that of the Ketos HaChoshen. The Ketos HaChoshen says we're not talking about Gzela at all, and he argues with Rashi, but rather we're talking about Masik. A person who drinks something, a person who breaks something that belongs to someone else, he consumes the object, he is a mazik. He's not a gazlan. And Reb Chaim Brisker, in his Seif on the Rambam, he tries to farend for Rashi, and he wants to say that a ganav who does a maisa hezek, that's called gneva. And that's why Rashi says, hudika gazal. But anyway, let's just summarize now the stira, the contradiction here between Rav on the one hand and Rav on the other hand. Rav is understanding that even though the ganav went ahead and he shechted the animal, nevertheless, there's no new maisik zel over here. He's a mazik. You could be mechayiv as a mazik. Comes along, Rav says, nay, you can't be mechayiv as a mazik. Why? Because he's a ganav. He stole it, and he has to pay Karen Kain Shagana. It went up in value. So what? So what if it went up in value? He's not chayiv for the Maisa Tvira or Shasiya. He's not chayiv for the Maisa Tvicha Machira. He's chayiv for the Maisa Gneva. As far as Karen is concerned, Rabos, again, let's not lose sight of the forest for the trees. As far as Dal Vehei is concerned, that's a different story. He's chayiv for the moment he starts destroying the object. Now he has a knas to pay, and it's Kain Amar Abedin, Kshas Amar Abedin. If it went up in value, pay the high value. But as far as Karen is concerned, that Chiyuv Karen emerged, shall we say, as a Chiyuv Ganov, and it remains a Chiyuv Ganov, Liolam Vod. Rava says something quite contrary. Rava is saying, yeah, it emerged as a chiyuv gneva, but now it took on a whole new dimension. He now destroyed the object. He's going to be chayv for keren on the destruction of the object. The maisa shesia, or in the case of an animal in gneva, the maisa tvicha, is a separate new machayev. Vis-a-vis keren. Why shouldn't he pay for the higher value? So the whole machlokas here, again, then the Gemara is going to be miyashing this machlokas, revolves around the following question. Can you begin with one chiyuv and strip that chiyuv and take on another chiyuv and replace it with the first? Rabbi says yes. You started as a ganav, but now you destroy the object. Forget about the fact that you were a ganav. You destroyed the object. Pay for that. It's got a higher value today. Pay for tavri v'shasi, pay for tvicha. How do we reconcile that with Rav? Rav, on the other hand, says, you stole the object, you have to pay for that kneva. It was worth one zuz at the time of Tzavish was pilot, and that's called Keren. Aye, now you destroyed the object, so what? You were a ganav, once a ganav, always a ganav. You are clipped, or how should I say, bound by the laws of Chiyuv Ganav. There's nothing that can replace and undermine your Chiyuv Ganav. So the Gemara says, Amri, we have to again reinterpret Rav. This is like the third time in a row we're reinterpreting Rav. Ki koma Rav kigon demei kara shavya arba ulebesov shavya zuza. When does Rav say that you pay? Keren, kein shegonav. That's only when it went down in value. That's called whose law, right? Zula. Because then, since it went down in value, you have no right to say that you're exempt from your original machayev of keren b'toras ma'isa gneva hotzos b'shus b'ilu. So pay the arba zuzin. Tashlumi keifel v'tashlumi arba v'chamisha kishas hamora b'din. Why? Because that's a separate machayev that Beis Din establishes a thief knas. But be that as it may, in the case where it went up in value, right? It was worth only one, and now it's worth four. Even Rav is going to accept the shita of Rabba, Keren Ke'en, Shas Shia, or Tavra Shasye, meaning Ke'en Tvicha. And why is that? Because the second Mechayev replaces the first Mechayev. Now, what is the second Mechayev? So I told you the name of the Ketos, that it's Masik. And if that be the case, I'm inclined to be open-minded, at least, to Rav's, to the Havamin of the Havamin of the Gemara in Rav, that maybe Mazik cannot replace a Chiyuv Gazlan. Here's where Rashi fits in very well. Rashi wants to claim that there are two types or two categories of Maisa Gzela. There's a classical Gzela in which I take the object out of someone's Rishus, and then there's another Gzela where I make it impossible for someone to have the object back. Comes along Reb Chaim and he says, if I make it impossible for someone to get his object back, that's called mazik. That's not called gazlan. What gives Rashi the right to classify that and define it as gazlan? Says Reb Chaim, there are new dinim of mazik with regard to a gazlan. Why? Because a gazlan stole it mibeis bayil, but his act of gzela, of gneva, is incomplete. Why is it incomplete? Because the Torah says meishus like gzela shel gazal, he has to return it. The very moment that he's mazik the animal, and he makes it impossible to return the object, it's like a new gzela. What is gzela? Gzela means I take it out of your rishus. Well, I only took it out partway of your rishus because I still have to return it to you. So you'll get it back. Let's be optimistic. But when it becomes pessimistic, when there's no possibility of his returning the object, namely the tavri shasiyeh, that becomes the absolute clincher of the gzela. The first stage of gzela is incomplete. The last stage, the finale, or the, shall I say, the clincher of the gzela, is the tavri shasi. Says Rashi, that's already gzela. And then Afkamina is going to be Karen Chengoso. Meaning that Rav in the Havamin is right that we cannot impose a chiv mazik on a chiv gazla. The gneva sets up a chiv of ke'en shagonav. And that's what he's going to pay. He's already chai for this object, ke'en shagonav. You can't impose a secondary chiv and superimpose that on him to pay ke'en shagonav. Says Rashi, no. What the maskon of the sugya, Rav is correct, and even Rav agrees to Rava. The mechayev here is not mazik, but rather what? Gasna. So again, let's look at the Rashi again inside. Rashi says, "Ahi shaita the tavre v'shasya, who deka gazile." That's when he stole the object. So but in the case of tavre memela, then he's going to be mishalim keren kein sheganav, even according to Rabba. Why? Because since, let's read it again. Itvar memela mishalim zuza. Again, what was it worth at the time of the hotzal v'shus bailim? It was only worth what? A zuz. So why does he get away with paying the zuz? And the answer is because there's only one mechayev. He never actually stole it a second time. Again, the second gzela means making it impossible for the nigzal to get it back. So if there was never a second gzela, in modern Hebrew we'd say gzela chozeret, then there's only one gneva. And even Rava agrees to Rav that the mechayev of keren in the case of gneva is kein sheganav.
Yeah, but now there's no object to return. You can't say harishol.
Right, but that's not a gneva. In other words, that's the problem of the nixal. That's not the problem of the gazlan. No, you can only be mechayev the gazlan a brand new chiyuv of kein tavrei v'shasye if he, the gazlan, has become a gazlan. He hasn't become a gazlan in the case of Tavra Mimela. And therefore you can't impose that chiyuv.
But he already was a gazlan beforehand.
So for that he'll pay. But that's called Ke'en Shigana. Now you want to say Ke'en Tavra Vashasi? That's because, by virtue of, a new Maisik Zela. When is it a new Maisik Zela? When he actively broke it. But if he didn't actively broke, there's no new Maisik Zela. There's no new Mechayev. And therefore he can only be Mechayev for the Shas. The Shas Gideva. The Shas... what do you call it? The Shas Hotzal mi base part.